Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Walt Schammel, Master Flight Instructor, 2004 National Safety Counselor of the Year, and retired FAA Inspector from Fort White, Florida, who is today's host.
Hello, this is the Florida Aviation Network. I'm your host, Walt Schammel. We're broadcasting live and in the clear for the 40th year celebration of Sun and Fun from the Florida Air Museum in Lakeland, Florida. Our guest today is Steve Larimore. He's with Stallion 51. He's a commercial pilot, a CFI, an A&P, and an IA. That's kind of an unusual combination for a pilot and a mechanic to be working on these airplanes. Welcome, Steve.
Good to meet you.
How long have you been with Stallion 51?
About 6 years now, full-time.
You said full-time. What did you do before that?
I started working for them, working on their T-6 as a mechanic. And then I was working on a P-38 project for a while as a mechanic. But I had a lot of time as a T-6 instructor already. So I was their backup T-6 instructor. And then eventually became the full-time T-6 instructor.
Where'd you learn to fly the T-6?
I got most of that time barnstorming, believe it or not. But a friend of mine started a T-6 company in St. Augustine, Florida, and I went to work for him, and it was just the two of us at first. And we did thousands of hours of T-6 flights in two, then three, and then eventually we got four T-6s all over the country. So I got a lot of time in a lot of different places and a lot of different conditions, and I learned a lot about maintaining a T-6 because we had to keep them flying, and we were flying them a lot. Great airplane for that, by the way. It's just a very durable airplane.
I think I've had some of those jobs where you fly during the day and you work all night
exactly.
On it.
Exactly. Been there. You know, they have to be ready to fly in the morning for revenue flights. So we had a real system going with that company where one of the airplanes would be worked on during the week while the other two flew, and then all three would fly on the weekend. So every 3 weeks, all the airplanes were getting at least a 100-hour inspection. So you can keep them going like that, but you have to have full-time maintenance people.
That's a lot of work. Did you ever fly up north into Canada or Alaska with them?
I did. I flew out of Alaska for a month. It was the warmest, driest July in Alaskan memory, and we got to fly a T-6 every day, right up till 10 o'clock at night, and for 1 month. That was nice.
What part of Alaska were you in?
That was Anchorage.
Anchorage?
Yep.
The big city.
The big city. That was very interesting.
Well, you do all the T-6 training.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about what training you would give a pilot that's been flying, say a 172 or something of that size to get into the T-6.
A lot of this really revolves around how much tail dragger time they have. The T-6 is a little bit of a bear on the ground, mostly landing, because the rudder becomes ineffective in a three-point attitude and you have to be on top of your directional control in a T-6. It's not a beginner's airplane. I like to tell people, a 172 pilot, for example, go get some tail dragger time with lots of landings in something else, something easier, Citabria, Decathlon, anything. And then I can transition you into the Texan. In the air, it's just a great flying airplane, but I like to describe it as a 5,000-pound tail dragger with a mean streak on landing, because it's got a lot of flap, not the elevator as much as the rudder. The rudder gets blanked in the three-point attitude, and it kind of becomes ineffective. So you have to be on top of your directional control in the three-point attitude in the Texan. I teach people how to do that.
So have you ever had a student, after landing, do that 360 and clear the pattern?
I've never been all the way around, no, because I don't give them much leeway in the Texan. I'm right there behind them. A couple of my friends have taken the ride. The most I've had was a 90-degree turn on the runway once, where I asked the guy to put the brakes on, and he only put one brake on. And it literally went 90 degrees. That got my attention before I could stop it. But I've never been all the way around in a Texan. Knock on wood.
I've had a few of those situations where I look at the pilot afterwards and say, why'd you do that?
Exactly. Or what did you do? Yeah.
Well, one of the things that you specifically do for the company is checkout training.
That's right.
So you give them training up to a certain proficiency point. What's the difference between that and a checkout training?
We have a syllabus. It's about a 10 or 12 hour syllabus that to get through the Stallion 51 training syllabus, you have to complete all the aspects of that syllabus. It's going to take you, the fast guys can do it in 8 or 9 hours. The slow guys are going to take 12 hours to do it. It's an all week long thing. And we like to say that they can take as much or as little of that syllabus training as they want. You know, you can come and fly an hour or two, or you can do the whole syllabus. The insurance companies like to see the sign off for the whole syllabus, because once they get past a Stallion 51 checkout, the insurance companies know that they can trust them not to wreck the airplane. So,
well, that's pretty important.
Yeah.
Some of the things the insurance companies are doing is giving a small discount if you complete certain steps, like in the FAA Wings program.
Yes.
Do your insurance companies that you work with give a break on insurance?
I'm not sure about the cost of it. I do know that they won't insure you without a certain amount of time in the T6. And they're getting more and more careful about that, let's say, because if one person wrecks their T6, the insurance company pays for it. You know, if they damage it, the insurance company pays for it. So they're getting very careful about that, especially in the T6, especially in the Warburg community right now, the Mustangs, Corsairs, Sea Furies, those airplanes. Insurance is an iffy thing.
Parts are getting harder to find for them,
and the airplanes are getting more and more valuable as the years go by.
Your transition training into the Mustang, what are you specifically looking for, and what are your procedures to transition into the 51?
The Texan is a great trainer for the Mustang. It was in World War II. They used to call it the pilot maker. It still is. It's the entry-level airplane for the larger Warbirds, the high-powered, 2,000 horsepower, big-engine, single-engine Warbirds. If you have Texan time, you probably have the skill level to get to a bigger airplane. But if you don't have that Texan time, you might not be there. You might not have the skill level. That's why the Texan is so valuable. The differences are, the Texan is a 5,000-pound airplane, and these Warbirds are 8 and 10 and 12,000-pound airplanes. They have a lot of energy. They have a lot of inertia and a lot of issues with torque effects, gyroscopic precession. So the Texan doesn't give them much of a feeling for that. But the Air Force and the Navy and a lot of different countries in the world knew that if they could get their military pilots through the Texan course, they were good enough to fly a Mustang. They were good enough to jump into a P-47 or a P-40 because the Texan is that difficult. It's a good trainer. It might be the best military trainer ever made.
You mentioned the military training. Of course, they don't do any of that anymore, do they? But back in World War II, a lot of pilots started out in the steerman. Did they go from that into the T-6?
That's a good question. There was a progression there. These guys had already flown Cubs, you know, little single-engine airplanes. They'd been in biplanes like the steerman and the Waco. They were already tail dragger pilots by the time they got to the T-6. The T-6 is kind of similar to the steerman in its directional control issues. So by the time they got to the Texan, they were already pilots. They were in the pilot seat. They already knew how to fly. The Texan at that point was an advanced trainer. So using it as a basic trainer for tail dragger pilots wasn't really its purpose originally. It can be done, but it takes a little bit longer. Right. These guys, they've been in Fairchilds, Volte Vibrators, BT-13s. They'd been in airplanes before they got to the Texan. And then the next thing they jumped into was a single-seat fighter with 15 to 2,000 horsepower. Single seat. They got a cockpit brief, and they were sent off on their way. As a matter of fact, there are instances where I can't remember the guy's name. I think it was Colonel Bixley. Transitioned his squadron from P-47s to P-51s. Put them in the airplane and said, you're going to learn to fly this airplane on the way to the target. That's the transition they got. That's the training they got. But they were good enough pilots that they accomplished it on the way to the target, escorting bombers. So that's how good their training was up to that point.
I think we did a lot of that, of throwing people in the airplane.
Early on, yeah.
Sink or swim.
Yeah. Later on, though, we ramped up our training in the mid-40s. We trained a lot of pilots. All these airports around here in Florida were World War II airports. Bartow was a P-51 base. Kissimmee was a night fighter base. There were bomber bases. McCoy in Orlando were bomber bases. We trained a lot of pilots in about a 2 or 3 year period to get them into the war as quick as possible. Those guys got excellent training. The guys that were in the Air Force and the Navy before that, they were transitioning into higher powered, more maneuverable fighters on their own. They basically were Wildcat pilots or P-40, P-39 pilots. And now they were getting P-38s and Hellcats and Corsairs, Mustangs, you know, some better airplanes. And they trained, those guys had the experience. And then later on, the guys we trained had really good experience.
In your T-6 transition program, if they transition into the P-51, do they come back and get some more T-6 time in the future, or do they come back and go right back into the P-51?
Not necessarily. Some of these guys, let's say an owner buys a P-51, they understand that the T-6 is the stepping stone to that airplane. They'll buy a T-6 first. They'll have a T-6 and a P-51. They'll train with me or somebody else in the T-6, build up some time, and then go to their P-51 training. Those guys are ready. That's really the way to do it, the way they did it in the military back in the 40s. So there are differences in the airplane. For the Mustang, it's an 8,000-pound operating weight. They operated them during the war at 10 and 12,000 pounds, but we've got an 8,000-pound airplane. It's kind of a hot rod. It's light for a Mustang. We're operating 1,700 horsepower, you know, very high-powered airplane. It's a real hot rod. The T-6 isn't. So some of the things I teach them in the T-6 at Stallion 51 translate directly into the Mustang. So we kind of changed the T-6 training a little bit. For example, in World War II, all the old-timer guys always did three-point landings. They didn't land them two-point very often. You know what I'm talking about, three and two-point?
Right.
Okay. I teach two-point landings because that's what we teach in the Mustang. Now, we do three-point landings, but we're not emphasizing a three-point landing every time like they used to. So we've changed the training in the Texan up to match the skills they're going to need in the Mustang later on. But not much. It doesn't take much.
I find that interesting because it seems to be about half the instructors say they always teach three-point, the other half, and I'm in the other half that said, no, we'll do a wheel landing and keep it under control.
Exactly. With the Texan, my whole lecture on this is kind of interesting. In full flaps in a Texan, you realize the flaps go all the way under the center section, right? There's only about this much room under the center section flap to let air through to get to the rudder. When you get to the three-point attitude, there's not a whole lot of clean air getting to the rudder. So you want to teach them reduced flap techniques. There are certain crosswinds. Remember, back in the day, they were landing into the wind more. They had round airports, they had triangle airports. They didn't have that many crosswind runways. They had a lot of grass airports. Now we're operating where we see a lot more crosswinds, single runway operations with the wind always blowing across it. There are certain crosswind conditions that you can't land a T-6 in three-point and still maintain directional control. Two-point, as you said, gives you more controllability. The rudder is up in the clean air longer, and you're at a slower speed when you reach the three-point attitude. So let's say you can increase your crosswind capability by landing two-point instead of three-point. You can still land at three-point, but if you touch down, let me go a little farther with this. The three-point attitude, full flap in a Texan, the stall speed is 63 miles an hour. It's one of those airplanes where you actually touch all three wheels down at the stall speed. You can do a true full stall landing in a Texan. But you don't have as much directional control. So if you're landing in a crosswind, three-point, which is actually two-point because you got a wing down, right? And a gust comes up, it can exceed your crosswind capability in a second. That airplane's going to weather vane into the wind because you landed it too slow. If you come in and land in two-point, actually on one wheel, you've got a lot more rudder control, so you can handle a stronger crosswind farther into the landing roll. So we make them do three-point landings. We do both. And anybody that tells you that they only do three-point landings or two-point landings is missing the boat completely. They should be able to do both.
I had a Navy pilot that wanted to check out in a 172, and that's pretty simple. Easy airplane to fly, and he'd been flying jet fighters and quite a lot of experience. And we came in for the first landing, about a 8-9 knot crosswind, and he misses.
He's a Navy guy.
Yeah, he goes around. I said, what's
they
the matter?
They never had crosswinds.
He said, I'm waiting for the runway to swing into the wind.
Exactly. That's
all
a good
right.
story.
Well, Steve, thank you very much. Appreciate you joining us.
You're
for
welcome.
Our 40th anniversary.
You're welcome.
And thank you for joining us with the Florida Aviation Network. And we'll be seeing you on the next one.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.